Let's open our Bibles to John chapter 11. We've been reading it the last few weeks, and I just feel like it's just good for us to read it together even yet again. It says, "Now a certain man was sick, Lazarus of Bethany, the town of Mary and her sister Martha. It was that Mary who anointed the Lord with fragrant oil and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick. Therefore the sisters sent to him, saying, 'Lord, behold, he whom you love is sick.' When Jesus heard that, he said, 'This sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God may be glorified through it.' And now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that he was sick, he stayed two more days in the place where he was." Please notice that verse. It's a bit weird, isn't it? When he heard he was sick, he stayed two more days in the place where he was. We're going to look at that. "Then after this, he said to the disciples, 'Let us go to Judea again.' And the disciples said to him, 'Rabbi, lately the Jews sought to stone you, and are you going there again?' And Jesus answered, 'Are there not 12 hours in the day? If anyone walks in the day, he does not stumble, because he sees the light of this world. But if anyone walks in the night, he stumbles, because the light is not in him.' These things he said, and after that he said to them, 'Our friend Lazarus sleeps, but I go that I may wake him up.' Then his disciples said, 'Lord, if he sleeps, he'll get well.' However, Jesus spoke of his death, but they thought that he was speaking about taking rest and sleep. Then Jesus said to them plainly, 'Lazarus is dead. And I am glad for your sakes that I was not there, that you may believe. Nevertheless, let us go to him.' Then Thomas, who is called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, 'Let us also go, that we may die with him.' So when Jesus came, he found that he had already been in the tomb 4 days. Now Bethany was near Jerusalem, about 2 miles away, and many of the Jews had joined the women around Martha and Mary to comfort them concerning their brother. Then Martha, as soon as she heard that Jesus was coming, went and met him, but Mary was sitting in the house. Now Martha said to Jesus, 'Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that whatever you ask of God, he will give you.' Jesus said to her, 'Your brother will rise again.' And Martha said to him, 'I know that he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day.' And Jesus said to her, 'I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he may die, he shall live. And whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this?' And she said to him, 'Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is to come into the world.' And when she had said these things, she went her way and secretly called Mary, her sister, saying, 'The teacher has come and is calling for you.' And as soon as she heard that, she arose quickly and came to him. Now Jesus had not yet come into the town, but was in the place where Martha had met him. Then the Jews who were with her in the house and comforting her, when they saw that Mary rose up quickly and went out, followed her, saying, 'She is going to the tomb to weep there.' And then Mary came where Jesus was and saw him, and she fell down at his feet, saying to him, 'Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died.' Therefore, when Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who came with her weeping, he groaned in his spirit and was troubled. And he said, 'Where have you laid him?' And they said to him, 'Lord, come and see.' Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, 'See how he loved him.' And some of them said, 'Could not this man who opened the eyes of the blind also have kept this man from dying?' And then Jesus, again groaning in himself, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone laid against it. And Jesus said, 'Take away the stone.' Martha, the sister of him who was dead, said to him, Lord, by this time there's a stench, for he has been dead 4 days. And Jesus said to her, did I not say to you that if you would believe, you would see the glory of God? And then they took away the stone from the place where the man was lying, and Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. And I know that you always hear me, but because of the people who are standing by, I said this, that they may believe that you sent me. Now, when he had said these things, he cried with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth. And he who had died came out bound, hand and foot, with grave clothes, and his face was wrapped with cloth. And Jesus said to them, loose him and let him go. Then many of the Jews who had come to Mary and had seen these things Jesus did believed in him. But some of them went away to the Pharisees and told them the things that Jesus did. And the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered a council and said, what shall we do? For this man works many signs. My goodness, what a story. But here you have the final sign. Remember, John is writing this gospel and says, many other things Jesus did, but these things I have written that you may believe that he is the Christ, the Son of the living God. And notice, he says, did he not open the eyes of the blind? Could he have not prevented this guy from dying? And Jesus, in a sense, is saying, actually, I could have prevented it, but you know what? You would have missed the fact that I have authority even over death. The sign became greater. But we've been going through this for a few weeks, and these verses teach us that Christians may be sick. And we also learned that Jesus is the true friend in time of need. And notice that Jesus loved them in spite of their difficulties. And last week, we looked at the fact that the New Testament, and we focused on a couple of verses where it says, Mary, this is what we're going to focus on today. Verse 3, it says, Lord, behold, he whom you love is sick. And then verse 5, now Jesus loved Martha and her sister Lazarus and Mary. And last week, we noticed that the New Testament, in the New Testament, it is love and not knowledge that makes strong Christians. We also saw that it is love alone that gives us the real power to live the Christian life. And we saw that the only motivation for service, for work, for the Christian life is love. And we also looked at the fact that there's no ultimate value in all we do unless it is grounded in love. But it's interesting. In verse 6, so when he heard that he was sick, he stayed 2 more days in the place where he was. Here we have an atmosphere of love. The home in Bethany, Martha, Mary, Lazarus, their home, the reason they are grieving is because they love Lazarus. The reason they are calling for Jesus is because they know that Jesus loves them. And they love Jesus. It was love and trust that made them turn to Jesus. Jesus received the message and understood it. And he says, this sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God may be glorified. Verse 6, so when he heard this, he stayed 2 more days in the place where he was. Listen. It was because of their certainty that Jesus loved Lazarus that they sent for him. And even more importantly, it was his love, it was Jesus' love that made him delay. His apparent indifference appeared to be a lack of love, but it was actually the evidence of his love. Let's think about this. Loretta calls anybody, just Brenda, and says, "Brenda, can you come over? Raph almost blew out the house," which actually happened. I was at home, and I was starting the fire, and I decided, like a smart guy, just to put alcohol to fuel the thing, and I had my alcohol bottle, and I was spraying it, and but the whole thing blew up. And I called Loretta. Actually, I'll change the story a little bit. I'll tell you the real story. But I called Loretta, and Loretta has a wonderful relationship with her phone, which is she doesn't answer. And so my next call was to Brenda. Brenda. Because see, what happened is the bottle blew up. Thank God it blew out forward and not backward, because all of a sudden the chair was on fire. I was like, oh no. So I took the cushion and I went to put out the fire. It's almost like a Mr. Bean, you know? Because I went to put out the fire, and next thing you know, the curtains were on fire. And I'm just like, what is happening here? And so then I opened the doors and I ripped the curtains and I threw them out, and I picked up the piece of furniture that was burning and I threw it outside, and I just grabbed the hose and put it all out. But I mean, when the bottle of alcohol blew up in my face, all I could hear was pee. And I called Loretta, no answer. And then I call Brenda, and she answered, and she's like, "I'm on my way." She gave me a banana for the shock. And then afterwards, she was on her way out, which she had been with me for about 30 minutes. And she says, "Here, maybe this will help you too." And she gave me a cognac. But the point I'm trying to make, imagine if I told Brenda, "I almost blew up the house. My house is on fire." And she's like, "I'll be there in 2 days." You could really misunderstand the love when you're asking someone for help. And rather than dropping everything they are doing and come over, they just sort of relax and grab a cup of tea. And in a sense, this is what's happening here. Now, it's really interesting because here we have two types of love. In verse 3, it says, "Lord, behold the one that him whom you love is sick." And in verse 5, it says, "Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus." And the two words for love are two different words. The word that is used about the one that you love is sick, the one that Mary and them use, is actually the word phileo. It's an emotional attachment. It is a friendship. It is affection. So they're saying the one you are affectionate about, the one that you are linked to, the one that is your friend, is sick. But when John, who writes this gospel, writes, "Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus," the word that is used is the word agape, which is strong, with a strong love, a determined love, with understanding. One writer, G. Campbell Morgan, says, "The sisters thought of the love of Jesus for Lazarus as that of a purely emotional affection, which would have hurried to be with them. Therefore, John is careful to declare that the love of Jesus for Martha, Mary, and Lazarus was that of a strong, intelligent affection, which was based on perfect understanding and therefore tarried in order that at last the greater victory might be won. Let me illustrate this with two things. One, I was in Cala Mesquita. Have you ever heard of Cala Mesquita? It's a beach on the other side of the where I'm from, in the area of Captepera. And I was there with a friend, and I was probably, about 23, 24 years old. And you know, at 23, 24 years old, we think ourselves invincible. We think ourselves heroic. I was actually, And as I'm there in Cala Mesquita, I noticed it is one of the most dangerous beaches on the island. It's between Menorca and Mallorca, so the currents there are quite bad. And there I was, and I saw in the distance with my friend someone drowning, asking for help. And so my first option was invincible, heroic. And the emotional just took off. I just went. By the end of it, I had to be rescued. It wasn't intelligent. It was emotional. On the other hand, when I did my dive master course, and we had to, and I was now in my 40s, when we were trained for emergency, or even when I was in the military, they asked us, listen, never jump into something. First pause, think, and make sure that you take the right steps forward where you don't endanger your own life. Right? On a plane, the stewardess says to you, first put the mask on yourself, then on the person next to on the child next to you. When you have somebody drowning, you have to be careful because they're panicking and they'll drown you. So you have to think, what is the best way of helping this person? That is intelligent. And so, isn't it interesting that here Jesus loves them intelligently? He is aware of everything that's going on. They are panicking. Jesus, the one you love, is sick. And he remains there two more days. Doesn't Jesus sometimes take longer in your life? Sometimes things get worse in our lives before they actually get better. Sometimes things turn out different than we foresaw. But you see, Jesus doesn't just act in emotion. He has the big picture in mind. So when he doesn't just love us emotionally with personal attachment, but with strong will, with strong, intelligent affection, based on perfect understanding, and therefore not only thinking of relief, but of the process that he's fulfilling in our lives. So imagine, Jesus, the one you love, is sick. And Jesus says, healed. They never would have experienced the power of Jesus to raise even the dead. They would have missed out on a deeper understanding and a deeper connection with Jesus. As a matter of fact, there's a story about Caligula threatening Lazarus after he had been resurrected by Jesus. And Caligula is just going, hey, you better turn away from Jesus or I'm going to kill you. And Lazarus goes, huh. And Caligula goes, listen, I'm being serious. I will kill you. Ha ha, said Lazarus. That's it. I am going to kill you. He goes, ha ha ha. Have you not heard? Death is dead. Death is dead. What do you say to someone who's been dead 4 days and has been risen by Jesus? How do you threaten that person? So because Jesus took longer, Lazarus was a stronger person. A stronger person in the strength and the ability of Jesus. And it is very important when we're going through difficulties that we realize that Jesus loves us not emotionally like we would, sort of to rescue us. If God is real, why has he not done this? When we want, how we want, and with whom we want. Because you see, he loves you so much, and he's so intelligent, and he is the master chess player. He sees every move that can be done, and he knows exactly what the best way forward is for a checkmate. He knows what's best for you and for I. And when we think of our Christian life, we have to make sure that we don't rush forward. We talked about this a few weeks ago, that we don't just rush forward into activity, but that we actually sit under the Word of God, that we sit under the Spirit of God, and that we allow God to ground our lives in love. You know, have you guys ever known of a Latin American singer, Farrakh? He is like, my goodness, I looked at one of his videos and I was like, whoa, what in the world is this? But he's become a Christian. Farrakh. Oh, see, I don't even know who Farrakh. Farrakh. Yeah. So he's become a believer and he's got a song about his testimony with a worship team. And it's just amazing how he becomes a Christian and he's trying to work the whole thing out. And he says, look, I'm not ashamed of my past songs. I'm just not going to let them affect me. But that's who I was. But this is who I am now. And Christians are just on them like bread on butter. Just like, almost like disqualifying him. He's a new Christian. And immediately as I was reading that, I was thinking, as I was reading about it and I was listening to the song, I thought to myself, isn't it amazing how people become Christian and all of a sudden there's these guys that are just nothing. I mean, they might be Christians, but they're pharisaical Christians. They're the guys that went up to Peter when he was in Galatia from James, and they made him afraid because of the rules, because of the obligations, because of the pressure. And all of a sudden, Christians that feel themselves better than other people. You know what? If you're ever feeling yourself better than other people, something's wrong with you, not with the other people. Note that. Every time I think myself better than somebody else, no matter what sins they're in, the problem is in me, not in them. Because I'm probably worse. Maybe just fearful to do it. Because our hearts are our hearts. And each person knows the plague of their own heart. So when we see someone, really, we should be broken for them. And this is what I'm trying to say. We need to make sure the foundation in our life is love. When you build a house, pay attention to foundations. We had Kuno here years ago, and we went to look at a property in Nova Santa Ponsa, and it was amazing. They were selling the house. I mean, a beautiful home for the price of the plot. And so you see, this couple had bought the house, but from another guy, and the other guy must have not looked at the foundation. But when this couple bought the house, the first year was just amazing. They really loved it until they realized the house was splitting in two. Literally, the house split in two. And then they noticed that it was all covered up with tape. They tried to tape the house and paint it. And what happened to this house is that they didn't pay attention to where they were building the foundation. So it was built on that area. Nova Santa Ponsa has a lot of movement of the earth. So depending if they don't pay attention, you can be on two plates. So those plates are moving and the house just splits. Pay attention on the foundation that you build your life. And the foundation that we need to build our life on with God has to be a deep foundation of love. We see who He is. Don't ever pretend to love God. Song of Solomon says, do not arouse or awaken love until it so desires. In other words, see whom you're loving. Get to know Him. Understand how righteous, how majestic, how kind, how patient, how sacrificial that He went to the cross. How forgiven that He would say, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And as you see His glory, as you see His worth, as you see His wonderfulness, then your heart will melt in love. The foundation in our life with God has to be one of love, not of duty. We looked at last week, love will drive us much further, will energize us much more than duty ever will. And that's my goal, really. My goal in this church is to cause us to grow together in who Jesus is. And that is, I mean, come on, you have Rick and you have Paul who love God, who are growing. And they're like, we just want to help others that have gone through the same. You have Steffi who says, oh man, I just want to love the women because she sensed the love of God. She's a princess. So she wants to realize that the women on the street are princess. When we come here together, we love our children. So we're involved in children's ministry, not because it's our duty, but because we love our kids and we want them to know God and to grow with Him. We serve coffees, not for the sake of having good coffee, but to love people and create good environments for conversation. It is love that drives us. Dorothy has the thing in India, the House of Hope in India. Why? Because she loves God and she loves the people there. But it is love that's the foundation, not duty. You see, Mark 12, verse 30 says, the greatest commandment, the greatest duty is you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your strength. And I say duty, but it really shouldn't be a duty. I've had seasons in my life where I married Loretta because I loved her. And I had seasons in my life that I had to love Loretta because I had to. Oh, and the other way is actually worse, poor thing. You know, there are times where, I mean, my goodness, but it's just wonderful when we grow in a relationship where we serve one another because we love one another. Do you love God? Is it fear that drives you? Is it dread that drives you? As a child with a father, the Bible says perfect love casts out fear. What's your attitude towards God when you pray? Is it just a shopping list? Is this just guilt? Or is there just a gladness? Just a gladness. We are so loved and He is so worthy to be loved. Listen, guys, faith, hope, and love. You won't need faith in heaven. You won't need hope in heaven, but there will always be love in heaven. Our love to one another. I mean, it's interesting that before we had Martha and Mary, one was sitting at Jesus' feet and the other one was working hard. And then Martha begins to complain. You know how we are. We get task-oriented and was like, oh, man, you should do this. Tell my sister to help me. Well, later on in this chapter, you actually have Martha, chapter 12, I think. You have Martha, Mary, and Lazarus, and Martha's just serving, loving each other. Because you see, the second commandment is not you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and strength, but to love your neighbor as yourself. I had a couple come to me recently with a very heavy marital conflict, very heavy. And I just felt like the Lord just gave me wisdom in that moment. And I said, I said to the guy, I know you love your wife. Sorry, no, I didn't say that. I said, I know you love God. I said, I know you love God. I know in your heart of hearts, your desire is to please God and you love him. And the way that you're going to demonstrate your love to him is by the way you love your wife. It's very simple. In chapter 21 of this book, Jesus says, do you love me, to Peter? And Peter says, you know all things. You know that I love you. And he says, feed my sheep. Three times he says that. He's telling them, the way you're going to demonstrate your love for me is by the way that you love other people. And you know, and to the woman I said, I know that you love God. And the way you're going to demonstrate your love to God is by loving your wife. And it's just, you know, that means loving people in our community. That means, you know, some of you guys are strange. I'm strange. Some of us are very different. We would never hang out together. That's right, with you, Leishan. I'm just kidding. No, I'm just kidding. But, you know, when Brenda came, I mean, Brenda, I was just like, what? I don't know how many times I've said this, but I remember saying to the elders, I said, watch out for Brenda. She's trouble. You know, and she's become like our mom away from our family. But we are so different. And yet, we get to love each other. We get to serve one another. With singles here, somebody says, we need a singles ministry. You know, and it's like, you know, with singles here, that the loving and respecting each other. As couples, appreciation and care. As parents, caring and guiding. We're going through a kind of a challenging, very challenging situation with Jonathan, you know. And then, what was it, just yesterday, I was sharing this song with him. And then we had a conversation about football because he's very emotional. He was just ready to take out players. He's like, I'm just going to go there. I'm going to cut their legs off. You know, just like, wow. Just so we're kind of going. I'm trying to tell him, Jonathan, you need to, whenever you play football, you need to think with your head, not your emotions. And I said, Jonathan, anything I'm saying to you, I'm not saying it to you as a Pharisee. I'm telling you because I love you. I want you to grow. I want you to be a fighter. I want you to have endurance. I want you to persevere. I want you to have the big picture in mind. But we love our kids. We love our wives. I just celebrated with Loretta. It was our 24th anniversary. We celebrated our 25th. So Loretta goes, I hope you don't jinx this. But it was amazing. We went for a night out to Girona. And we spent the night there, went for a meal. And I, on the way back, it was like, we could have done more. But in a sense, it's like the loving each other. That's what makes us different. Do you realize that in the early church, that, oh my goodness, time. Do you realize that in the early church, they were accused, sorry for using this, but they were accused of being very liberal and having orgies because of their love feasts. Listen, their love for one another was so pure and so intense that they accused them of sin. All they could say is, look at how they love each other. And here Martha, Mary, and Lazarus, they love each other, and they love Jesus, and Jesus, they're secure in Jesus' love for them. That's the goal. That's how we grow. And our attitude towards his commandments need to be love. That means this, and I notice as teenagers, we don't want anyone telling us what to do. But listen, it is amazing. I wish, and I told Jonathan this, I would die. I would have died for someone, for a male figure in my house, that would actually sit me down and say, this is life. Let me walk you through it. Let me help you through it. My dad left when I was 5. My stepdad, it was a rough situation. He was very young and very inexperienced and very had some mental health issues. But I never had someone that actually would take the time and maybe try to help me in life. But at the age of 25, Jesus drew near. And I don't see this as a bunch of rules to follow. I see this as a guide. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church, and he nourishes us and cherishes her and washes her. Fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath. And I read that and I don't see that, oh, that's a law I have to do. I'm just like, that hurts because I can yell. Jonathan said to me the other day, can't you just talk to me? If you would change, I would just talk to you. but you know, I don't see it as a rule. I see it as that's the way to go. And God is making us into that. He's growing us into that. And listen, guys, finally, this love has to be, that he's producing us, has to be steadfast. It cannot be sporadic. I love you one moment, I hate you the next. With God, it cannot be, oh my goodness, you give me what I want, so I love you. Oh no, you're taking too long, so I'm leaving. Oh no, this is too difficult, I'm done. In our relationships, it has to be, it's interesting that sometimes we help people, and have you ever had this, maybe you haven't had this, have you ever had this where you do something good to someone because you have so much love for them, you're just so moved and you just love them and you do something and then you hear they're talking about you and you regret all of it. You know, it's just like in that moment, the flakiness of my love is demonstrated. I want to love those who love me. But Jesus has much more in mind for us. He wants to help us love steadily, not flashes of love, not moments of love, but a constant. Shakespeare said, love is not love who alters when an alteration finds. Oh no, it is a fixed point that looks at waves and tempest and is never moved. And one of my favorite things to do, and actually it's Timo's Werner's favorite things to do was going to the cliffs when the waves are raging. And you just go to a rock. You stand on the rock and the waves are just like, and you're not moved. I'm a flake. I'm not telling you this because I've arrived. I'm telling you this because I'm convinced that's what he's producing in us. Job said, though he slay me, yet I will trust him. Paul and Silas when they were put in prison in Acts 16, I think it was Acts 16, they were there in the depths of the prison, and the whole place was moved by the fact that they were worshiping. And then an earthquake happened, and the guy that had beaten Paul, he grabbed the sword because he thought that they had escaped, and he went to kill himself because as a Roman, if you lost your prisoners, you were sentenced to death, and he was about to kill himself. And Paul didn't say, "Let him." He said, "Do yourself no harm because we're all here." And it says that the guy began to just, you know, had him in his house. And what must I do to be saved? And he says, "Believe. Believe, and you and your whole household will be saved." And it's amazing. It was that demonstration of love that caused the question, "What must I do to be saved?" Here I was punishing you. How in the world do you still care for my life? And so here, there's this incredible atmosphere of love. And I want to finish with this. In the depths of the trial of Mary and Martha losing Lazarus, he is sick. Jesus took longer, not because he didn't love them. On the contrary, he took longer because he truly loved them. He was producing something greater. And the danger in our life is that we misinterpret when things take longer, when Jesus doesn't do things as we thought he should do them. And then we make bad decisions instead of saying, "Lord, if you would have been here, he wouldn't have died." Yes, but we're still with you, Jesus. And realizing that Jesus felt what Mary and Martha were going through. He wept, and then he snored just at the sight of their pain. He sympathized with them. What an amazing message, huh? I mean, not me, the message. What an amazing message that God has given us to communicate. I'm so glad that I don't have to go around teaching people to hate. In the UK, they are just forbidden hate preachers. They said, "We're not going to allow hate preachers," and speaking about Islam and things like that, you know? But I mean, what an amazing that the message, I'm not making it up. It's here. It's here. We're not making it up. What an amazing message we have. And what an amazing privilege we have to be under the hand of God, the loving hand of God. And so the musicians are going to come up, and then Chris is going to lead us in communion this morning. And listen, when we take the bread and when we take the cup, what are we celebrating? What is it that we're celebrating? We're celebrating the love of God with grateful hearts, with loving hearts to God. But then also one loaf, one cup to one another. Love to one another. So Chris, if you would come up.